the movies. It is the general idea that God is at work everywhere. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can hear not just God speaking, but also the cries of humanity, the questions people have, the stories that are resonating in culture and in societies. Engage with what it is that the media, the movies, the TV shows, critically think through them, and not in a way where you're like critiquing them all the time, but in a way where you're engaging with them in a meaningful way. What is it about this that resonates with you? What's true about it? What's false about it? What are the claims of this that are not true? What are the things that are happening? We shouldn't turn our brain off. We shouldn't turn our spirit off. We shouldn't turn God off, ever. How do we begin to attune to stories that move us, why they move us, how we see God at work in the world? So this is a series kind of along those lines.
Okay, welcome back. This is the Right Side Up podcast with Danielle Strickland and
James Scholl.
Yeah, it right. is.
And that's on some of our thumbnails.
We're too lazy to change that to other things, but other than that,
I need to have more of an ego, frankly. Like some of these movie stars that maybe we'll be talking about today. How's that for a segue?
And we're on the second episode of Oscars, this Oscar 2, because there were so many Best Picture Oscars.
I didn't know there were this many Best Pictures until I started having a show up for this. I'm like, oh, they just do a lot of movies now, which is fair. There are a lot of movies been produced, and a lot of them are of a high quality, so it's understandable.
Really interesting, James. I've always been a big movie fan.
Okay.
I've always loved the movies, and I think one of the reasons I've always loved the movies is because they're stories. And I'm a big story person. I love stories. So I also love reading, as you know, some fiction.
Yes.
But all the other things too. But I just love the immersing yourself into a story. I think it's quite a beautiful exercise. So I've been loving this podcast series on God at the movies and media, and just having the invitation to say, where is culture? Where is God? How does this inform the way that we operate in the world? And it's been beautiful. So I've been thankful.
There is something, again, I don't want to create an idol of my time or anything, but there is something amazing about being able to experience a quite encompassing and enrapturing story in a couple of hours. We spend some time talking about TV shows on this as well, and I think there is something wonderful about that more long form approach to storytelling, which can be nice. But actually, it makes you appreciate how impressive it is to kind of get such a cohesive story and narrative within like 2 hours or something. It's quite impressive.
Oh, it's incredible. I think incredible. And even just to think that way. So actually, we should probably just start with Fablemans.
Sure.
Because this is really the story of that. So we have a couple of questions that have been helping us frame some of our discussions. But a quick catch up to the Fablemans story is basically Steven Spielberg's life story. It's not exact, but he has created a screenplay that around himself and his own calling, really, I would say, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller. So, and what experiences this draws us into, I don't think you've seen this one, James. So
you're going to be telling me as well as our listeners. That's
yeah. I mean, have you heard much about it?
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is it's a kind of, an homage or something to the beauty of storytelling through the medium of film almost, right? It's kind of almost like my generation might say it's kind of meta, or maybe the generation below me. I might be too old to say that, but it's a kind of appreciation of storytelling through film, through the storytelling through film kind of thing.
Yeah. And because it's a young Steven Spielberg, it's a coming of age story that kind of collides with this, like, ooh, I could tell good stories.
Yeah.
And then it collides with this, like, and I'm also in a tragic and beautiful. And so it's like this kid who is in this tragic, beautiful family story that is being called to tell stories as well. That, and then when you know who the director is, you know, we don't know, like, it's Steven Spielberg, people, like, this is like the storyteller of storytellers in film.
Yeah.
And you realize, like, oh, part of the gift that he has in telling complicated, complex, beautiful, sad, good stories is because his own story is complex and beautiful and sad and good, uncomplicated. And so he sees, like, he's being formed by this story, and then he's able to tell the stories in that way, which I think is kind of beautiful. And it's tragic too. Like, it's a divorce and mental illness of his mom, and like the divorce of his parents. And there's like a lot of complicated tragedy in the story, but then also even the story is filmed in beauty. Like, his mother's celebrated, and there's so much gifting in her own art genius. You know, she's a musician, a piano player. And so I don't know. It's a very beautiful story. I think where people get lost in it is it's a little long. And Steven Spielberg kind of takes his time, which a director like Steven Spielberg can do.
Yeah, when you're you get to take as long as you want, right? You're Steven Spielberg.
He has nothing to prove.
Yeah.
But it is like this beautiful tribute almost to the way stories can redeem and bring something into the world that's beautiful, create. It's an outlet for this kid who needs an outlet. It's life-giving. And I really admired the way that even today, directors like Steven Spielberg see the world differently. They just do. They have a different lens on which they see the world because they see it through like good storytelling. And I thought it was really beautiful to see where that started happening in him. Like, as a young kid who got like this filmmaking thing, and he started creating different things he could do to make it look certain ways. Just even as a kid in high school, fooling around with his friends, he was doing these like cowboy mysteries and all these different genres, and he was creating ways to tell the story and captivating people. And I just think it's such a beautiful gift to be able to do that. So I was celebrating the fact that he exists in the world and that he's done such a beautiful job of telling great stories.
Those two pieces that kind of jump out to me there, which I think are interesting, is the power of story. So dare I bring in our good friend Jesus here, and one who brought in parables, brought in stories. And there is, we're a culture that's kind of quite obsessed with science and mathematics and things being provable, and those things are okay. So not anti-science here or anything, but when that becomes all there is, I think that we can miss an awful lot. To say something like, well, did this happen, is less interesting a question to me as to whether it's true. And I think there are some things that are true. Again, the parables of Jesus are true. Did they happen? It doesn't matter. The point is they're true, not the point that they happen. So I think there is something about just elevating story and the truths that those stories can reveal. I think what's also interesting is even you sharing this kind of semi-autobiographical thing is both a testament to the importance of story, but the importance of testimony as well. That sharing our stories has this incredible power to bring people alongside, to show people a kind of different way and different experiences. I don't know. I feel like when I was growing up in church, it was testimonies that always drew me in above anything, actually. Just like, and that's just people sharing their story. I'm going to a group later on today with people who have had some quite difficult lives. And hearing their stories is the highlight. Like every time, it's the highlight. It's just hearing the stories of people and what they've been through. So I think that this movie seems to be highlighting that. And deep down, I think we know that as well. We know the power of stories. We know the power of testimony. But sometimes it needs to be really overt, perhaps, for us to reckon with it.
Well, I think, too, the complexity of it, like I said, what Steven's good at is what happened to him, which is his story is true. His story is good. His story is bad. His story is painful. His story is celebratory. Like, you know, it's all the things. It's not one thing. And so he shows that really well, his own story. And then he tells stories that way. And I feel like for me, I was just thinking about the Bible.
Yep.
Like, which is a book of stories. And it's a book of national stories and song stories and sad stories and happy stories and celebratory. And the whole thing is like this complex, beautiful story that God told that way. God tells it that way. He doesn't clean it up. He doesn't change it. He doesn't like Netflix numb it down. He tells it in all of its gory complexity and goodness and beautifulness and celebratoriness and tragedy and horror and pain. So I love that. I think just God obviously loves to also tell a true, good, beautiful story. Mm. And so I saw a little bit of that there. What do we do with it? I think we enjoy it. I think we enjoy that story told by someone who's way at the end of their career.
Mm. Yeah.
Who can look back in a way that you can't always see when you're in it. And I love the way that Steven Spielberg kind of is able to redeem some of the terribly tragic things that were part of his life, in that he saw how those formed him to tell good, you know, to really be able to tell good stories. And I thought that was, you know, what are the things that happen? And this is where we say, like, God redeems everything in every way. How does God redeem those things that we maybe, I don't think God wanted those things to happen to him at all. But how does God work through, you know, those things? And that, I thought there were some really beautiful things there and more, but just the story itself is beautiful.
Hmm.
The Fabelmans, that's it. Tar, let's go ahead and talk about Tar.
I feel this is a lesser known one. So Danielle took one for the team and watched this one as well.
Well, I watched it before I knew we were doing this. I'm a Cate Blanchett fan.
It's just
fan.
A real cinephile, right? Like that's the...
Well, I'm a big Cate Blanchett fan, and gotcha. I had heard that this was Oscar-worthy performance, so I wanted to see her perform because she is a very gifted actress.
Mm.
I know a lot of people were mad that she didn't win because they think it's one of the best performances, but I'm super glad that the person won that won. So it's the woman from...
Michelle Yeoh won. Yeah.
And so I'm like, I can't be mad about that. Like, even though I do think Cate did deliver...
I'd feel okay with losing to that. That's if you haven't watched the... Listen to the first episode, that's us gushing over Everything Ever All at Once.
Yeah, but, that's right. But Tar is complex. It's complicated. And I think that's what makes it an incredibly brilliant movie. And I also think that's what makes it really kind of a hard movie to watch, because it's not a movie that you go like, oh, that was awesome. Or like, you're like, wow, she was great. You kind of go like, ah, this is hard, because there's no real landing spot of like, is she a bad person? Is she a good person? Is she just a broken person? Like, what?
Give us a 20-second synopsis.
Like, yeah, the synopsis is she is a character, a musical virtuoso. She's a conductor of an orchestra in Berlin, I think. And she's like the best in the world. And she's kind of genius level. And so the movie picks off with her being interviewed. And you're supposed to know who she is. She's like a person of great importance. And she's just kind of risen to this fame. But then in her life is filled with just kind of like paranoia, and she's a jerk, really, I guess is the best way to put it. She's just a jerk. She's a jerk because she's an exceptional genius. She's a jerk because she's been taught to be a jerk by exceptional geniuses. Like, that's how they act. That's how they are.
Mm.
That's how people were to her. So, you know, so all of her relationships are transactional. She thinks super highly of herself. Even in her relationship at home with her daughter, like there's some weird, you know, she's not really tender or intimate or present.
Hmm.
She's mostly off doing her genius thing. So what the director did in this case is, this would be a super easy film to make about a guy. Because it's all the things that, you know, guys are, I guess, criticized for, or it's sort of that character of like this, you know, guy who's just like an incredible genius at work, but then a jerk everywhere else. And so it works with a guy. Cause
that's also
like,
been told a billion times. Like, I feel that's.
Yeah. And so what he did was he switched it with a woman, which really switches it up, because you're like, you're not taught that way. And we don't talk about women who are jerks, and we don't talk about, because there's not a lot of women at the top of their field, especially in those fields. So maybe they just haven't had the opportunity to be jerks yet. I don't know. And it's this kind of like, oh, it's a woman, but she's also a jerk because she's leading like she's been taught.
Mm.
And it's this male dominated sphere. And, you know, people are competing and politicking and like crushing each other. And she's in the middle of that. And anyway, so it's just like, is she a good guy? Is she a bad guy? And then a lot of the reviews I read about it basically say, it's also this conversation about whether or not we judge people for the character of who they are versus what they produce, like their art. Mm. So they would say, as an artist, do we appreciate the artist because of their musical genius, or can we not appreciate their art because their character is, you know, not what we would want it to be?
I feel even that's a relatively new thing. I don't think it's a bad thing, but even to have the conversation about whether we don't accept what someone is producing because their character is so off point. And this is a conversation that we have a lot, I suppose. I get, because if I go to a restaurant and the burger tastes good, I don't say, like, does the chef love his children? Do you know, that's not like, right. I'm quite happy to take that in. Right. But there do seem to be spaces where we think that the character does matter, I suppose. And maybe, especially in spaces where we're striving to be leaders, I suppose. And that's where it kind of, it stands out for me that if someone is trying to be a leader, you should be exemplary in your behavior. And it feels like, yeah, maybe she's not hitting those beats.
Yeah. And you're leading also, you're the head of an orchestra, which I think is interesting because you are a musical genius to do that, but also you have to work with people. So there is this sort of like, maybe you can be a musical genius by yourself in a room somewhere, like maybe Prince was. Right, where he's locked in a vault and he's just producing music and he just, you know, emerges every now and then to call himself the artist formerly known as Prince or whatever. But, and you just sort of go, okay, we know he's a genius and like genius.
He's doing his thing.
But, you know, but this is like someone who's actually, like you said, is leading and is considered a leader and needs to lead people well. And so I think there is sort of like, I don't think you can just be a genius at the expense of people and then be celebrated. I think there has to be some sort of accountability, but anyway, so there's a lot here. There's a lot, the gender dynamics are interesting because you're so unused to seeing women lead that way and be that way. And even if we're, maybe some of us have had those experiences, but we can't even really say it much because we've polarized the conversation so that all women are good and all men are bad. Cause that's so easy to do, but and that's not true either. We know that's not true. So anyway, it's a worthy film just for that. Just the complicated nature of that is. There's one particular scene where her daughter has been bullied at school. And so this character goes with her daughter and meets the other girl. She says, show me who the girl is. And she goes over to the little girl and she gets down at the girl's level. And basically, you keep expecting her as a parent and like a leader in the community to sort of say, hey, it's not cool what you did to my daughter, you know, whatever. But instead, she just like completely like, if, you know, I'm going to hurt you and like, it's like really bad, but with words, not even with threatening behavior. Like all her behaviors say like, oh, I'm kind and compassionate and at your eye level. But then the words that come out of her mouth are like foul and abusive and toxic. And it's kind of this one scene where you're like, oh yeah, that's how she does everything.
Yeah, sure.
Right? This is who she is. And she doesn't even know that to speak to a child like this, even if it's for a good reason, is not a right thing. So anyway, that toxic nature of leaders is what that's about.
I think
go see it. It's interesting.
Does sound I'm compelled. That seems so. I think you bring up an interesting point there, and I think we often feel this way. And whether it's we think that people are experts or geniuses are kind of entitled to be jerks, or what came first? Were they jerks and now they're geniuses, or are they geniuses? Like, this gets brought up with Michael Jordan, who's considered to be the greatest basketball player of all time, but was just like a pretty nasty person in lots of ways, because all that mattered to him was winning. Like, all that matters is winning, and it didn't matter what was in his way. And people say, well, you know, and it just, you know, that's what kind of what it takes. I don't want to, but does it though? Like, is it possible to be excellent without those things, or is it? And I don't know. I certainly see that there are certainly a lot of examples of excellence without cruelty. So we've seen examples of that in the world. I think it's also recognizing that I guess some people might respond better to negative enforcement. Like, some people might actually kind of need that or like it or prefer it. But that doesn't work for everyone. And you can see other examples of people who were brilliant, but because they got the wrong kind of enforcement, it kind of broke them. But their stories don't get told because they don't make it. Like, that's how it works, right? Like, you've been broken. And I think what's fascinating about Jesus, who I love bringing it back to all the time, is like the most competent, powerful, brilliant, perfect person ever. And yet this is how he chooses to lead. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if it ever doesn't look like the kind of actions of Jesus, if it doesn't look like humility, if it doesn't look like the fruits of the spirit of love and joy and peace and patience and all of those pieces, then we're doing something wrong. And there's
also I would say, then is it genius?
Yeah.
Then is it even genius? Because, if we think about genius as like a height of creative energy and power, then wouldn't that be sacred somehow?
Mm.
And if it isn't that, you know, it might be glorious. It might be like, you might just be like, wow. And like, you're wowed by like technique, but is it actually even sacred if it's not good?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole other conversation, I suppose. But but what is interesting about Tar is the other one of the other nominees, which we'll mention here, even though we've done a whole bonus podcast of our last season, just called Women Talking About Women Talking. And that's at Women Talking was a film that was nominated for Best Picture, which I think is amazing on many levels. One, the film's worthy of it. It's brilliantly done. The screenplay is incredible and the way it's filmed is remarkable. But go hear all of those because we actually saw it with a bunch of survivors with Hagar's voice. And then we talk about it afterwards. It's very interesting to hear survivors talk about the movie about survivors. it's fascinating. But what I liked in some ways is that Tar is sort of more complicated. The woman really is in an abusive place of power. And then there's like, you know, how she's held accountable is part of that conversation of that movie. And then Women Talking, which is an exercise of imagination. It's not a true story in that the ending's not the same in real life as it is. It's a true story in that the scenario is true, but the movie is an imagined ending and the ending's different in real life. But it is about the sexual abuse and sort of around faith as well. So the conversation of faith and sexual abuse. And I think just the worthiness of that subject being talked about at that level was quite something at the Oscars this year. So I'm super thankful for that film. And I highly recommend you watch it and give our episode in the last bonus episode of the last season a listen if you're going to go do that.
I have, my understanding is that the movie is brilliant and all the men I've seen it have seen it like it's amazing. My friend who's a survivor of abuse basically said that this is brilliant and probably good for survivors to see, but she said that no, they don't need to because they already know. Yes. Like you're just watching experience, you know.
Yeah.
She said every single man in church and leadership needs to see this movie. Mm. Every single one. Like, okay, that's, yeah.
Yep. And if you're going to go see that, know this, they do a great job at holding the tension with faith, like a genuine commitment to faithfulness to Jesus and the way of Jesus in the middle of this film, which I think is the hardest thing to do. And they did it really well. So kudos.
Brave Global is a catalytic movement for girls. Brave intentionally reaches out to vulnerable girls. Brave sees empowerment as the goal. Brave celebrates diversity. Brave connects the community and the local church to work together. Brave believes that girls are the solution, not the problem. Go to braveglobal.org for more information.
So Brave Global is one of the initiatives that I'm probably most proud of. So it took me...
We connected, actually. You came to the church I was working at.
The first Brave in Toronto.
Yeah, Canada. That's right.
And Brave seeks to empower girls before they're trafficked. And there's a lot of statistics that pointed us in the right direction to identify vulnerable girls and to try to get to them first.
And so much of Brave is really cool, actually. It's really exciting. I think the way that you wrap around the girls who are involved and take seriously the risks of vulnerable girls, but also do so much to empower them. I think that word empowerment comes up over and over again, and it needs to, and it should, and it does.
Yeah, so braveglobal.org is where you want to go for the main. There's also braveglobal.ca, which is the Canadian Brave site. So if you're Canadian, you want to donate to Brave this Christmas, that would be so wonderful for us to f- fulfill our mission and our mandate, which is to empower and mobilize communities to then be a solution to the problem of human trafficking and exploitation. So we want to prevent exploitation from happening. It is, I don't even know how to describe it to you, but the first Brave event I went to live, I felt like this big cosmic key turned in a door and it opened. And it was a door that had been locked forever. And I just feel like there's a generation that wants to get out of this onslaught, this like sort of perpetual cycle of servitude, and they're leaving, and it's beautiful to watch. So let my people go. And if we need you to help us continue that work, so braveglobal.org or braveglobal.ca. Either way, if you would consider gifting that organization in order for them to continue their great work, that'd be awesome. Okay, Top Gun, dare we go there?
I don't know. Like, okay, everyone's pretty hype about Top Gun. I like the original Top Gun because it's silly action. I hear that this one is quite fun as well. I don't know.
I just want to say,
how do you feel? How do you feel about it, Daniel?
I did enjoy the movie. I thought it was very
entertaining. You're allowed to enjoy things.
I thought they did a good job. But here, come on, people. Best picture? I mean, on what planet? Like, is Scientology the donor of the Oscars or something? Like, how did, like, what? So anyway, I do not think it deserves to be best picture categorized. I don't know how this happened. It feels like just like a weird, I think James, you were saying this to me before, is that you think it happened because Top Gun kind of saved the movies.
Yeah. It's a whole thing that kind of people actually, it's not quite that simple. There's lots of kind of talk about whether the theaters are dying, and actually they're kind of not. People have realized that actually they don't love, there is an experience about going out that people do enjoy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it certainly did a lot in getting people out again. So that it does make sense. I mean, it was incredibly successful and very popular. I will say, amongst my group of friends that is fairly broad, all the people that watch this movie enjoyed this movie. So I guess,
surprised.
Like, you know what? That's impressive, right?
I guess I'll tolerate a popular remake.
The fact that a bunch of people watch a movie and all like it, that's not Oscar worthy. That's like community defining. Name me another thing that everyone likes. Like, that's like warm hugs or something that like 80% of people don't even like.
But they did manage. There are some themes in that movie that are great in terms of like, what does it mean to really love each other and relationships and like rebuilding trust. There's even just your own calling of who you are supposed to be. So even Top Gun himself, Maverick, you know, who is he and who defines who he is? And, you know, there's all kinds of things. One of the interesting things about that movie to me was it was the first time they've ever done a movie because they had intended it for a global audience where they have an enemy but don't name the enemy.
Interesting.
So they actually have this like enemy that they need to take down and they're over their airspace and all this stuff, but the enemy's unnamed because they didn't want to name the enemy because then it wouldn't be able to be released in name the enemy country or the ally of the enemy country. And I thought, isn't that fascinating? Is we've entered into an age of global distribution of the movies.
Yeah.
Where the only people named are the good guys and they're American, of course. But the bad guys are unnamed because we're not sure who they are and if they'll stay that way and all kinds of things maybe we've learned from history. I don't know.
And the good thing is there is like no issue in the world with America's military policy.
There's still the good guys for sure.
If you can unironically have the American military as the good guys, I'm like, I mean, I think we could pay a bit more attention perhaps, but that's fine.
And that's the only thing, the other thing I think might be worthy of paying attention to with Top Gun is the desire in people for nostalgic revisits. I think there is a real desire in people in a changing world to have something familiar and to revisit things that are deeply meaningful to them. So like a lot of people, the first Top Gun film would have been a really deeply meaningful film for people. It would have moved them in powerful ways. And so to actually go back to that spot was meaningful to people. I think there's something about that which we probably shouldn't ignore.
I think, having not seen the movie but listened to you talk about it, there is something attractive about kind of unambiguous bad guys, right? Like there is a good guy and a bad guy, and the bad guy is really, really bad, and that's kind of all there is to it. And we realize the real world is more nuanced than that, which is complicated and tiring, because then you realize that some of your friends aren't as great as maybe they could be, and the people you looked up to weren't so great, and your enemies had, you know, have more humanity than we realize. So there is, but I think there's also a danger in that. I think there is a danger in just having an enemy that is so other that we can't actually kind of learn anything, because then we think that enemies are really obvious. Again, the kind of Satan comes as an angel of light comes to mind for me, that generally when things are bad, they're usually wrapped up in something good. But what this movies like this can mean, which I'm being very mean about for a movie I haven't seen and quite want to watch, is that with things like this, it can make us think, okay, there is no nuance or ambiguity. And so when something's bad, it'll be very, very, very obviously bad. And then when we see something that feels a bit bad, but isn't very, very bad, we kind of let it slide. And I think I'm nervous about those kind of things, I suppose, recognizing where things are harmful, but because they're not overt enough. I mean, it's hilarious to me that we can't just have like Nazis as bad guys anymore, because there's, you know, Nazism's making a comeback or something.
No, I think it's still safe to call Nazis bad.
Well, I think so.
Yes, just for the record, I do.
If that's the takeaway from this podcast, it's like James seemed incredibly sympathetic to Nazis.
No, that's not what
I'm going for.
But I want to say this, because I don't want to give too much time to Top Gun, because I think it deserves being mentioned in this list. But nonetheless, there are some good leadership lessons in there and stuff like that. Go check it out if you want a nostalgic, fun, feel-good film. But what I do want to talk about is All Is Silent on the Western Front.
All Quiet on the Western Front.
All Quiet on the Western Front, which is unbelievably gutting.
So this feels like a war movie without the
about war and military, and that, like, so if you want to actually do a cool experiment, and this is just a challenge out there, I would watch Top Gun, and then I would watch All Is Quiet on the Western Front, and then have a conversation about what each of those movies tells you about war and military and service and all that kind of stuff.
All right, I like that. Yeah,
that would be not fun. Fun's the wrong word. But that would be a very good thing to do.
All Quiet on the Western Front. I believe this is the third. It's based on a book, which is, I think, is it like semi-autobiographical? I think it's written by someone who was...
It's German. It's originally German. And it's a German producer, and it's a German film. It's a German film, so it's in subtitles.
Yeah.
I think there is a dub version maybe, but I watched it in subtitles.
Yeah, I did.
Which is even more powerful, of course, because Germans were a military superpower. So it would be like America releasing an anti-war movie, you know, in 50 years.
Wouldn't that be wild?
Yeah, that would be wild.
Yeah.
And just sort of lessons they learn from serving. And so the guy that wrote this book, I think it is a bit autobiographical in the sense of, like, it's his experience of war.
And it's awful. So there have been like three movies, and I think all three of them have been nominated for awards. Like, each one of them is brilliant, and this one's no exception, I think.
The filming in this is unbelievably, like, it's beautiful. It's the way they film this thing is a piece of art. It really is. And all I would say is, I'll just give you a warning. Like, it is gutting. It is horrific. I mean, it is so hard to watch. But in a good way, because I feel like that is what war is. It is gutting. It is unredemptive. It is horrifying. And it should be that. And it should be known as that. It should be seen as that. So one of the things we look for, and one of the things we're trained for, so this is why the exercise of watching Top Gun would be interesting, is because there's all these, like, feel good dopamine kind of, like, redemptive violent myths that we've been taught our whole life. Like, the good guys rise to the occasion, or something is saved, or someone goes home with a good story, whatever it is. And in All Is Quiet on the Western Front, nothing's redeemed.
It's just horror, because that's what I think. What's interesting too is, even when we look at, say, Top Gun, for example, you're quite, I mean, I've only seen the first one, so I have to guess, but even being in a plane, by being in a plane, you're distanced from the horror, right? You drop your bomb, you fire your missile, and something blows up a while away. Whereas in All Quiet on the Western Front, you're on the ground and you see these bombs exploding and you see the damage that it does and you see the horror that they bring about. I wonder if that's a difference too, right? Germany is a country that has experienced firsthand, like, the absolute terror and horror of war. Whereas America has, but it's overseas, right? It's something you kind of go to rather than something that comes to you necessarily. And yeah. maybe that kind of plays into the...
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Like, yeah, again, and how many generations removed
which
from
they
that are we?
From
yeah, which again, day, like, and right. everything, and that's why there's no racism in America anymore, because that fixed everything.
yeah, I would say there's so many different things to talk about in this movie, but what I would say is that it is the best war movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think I probably agree with that, actually.
Because it tells the truth, and I think that matters. I think we're living in a day and age where we're threatened with war like never before. Where nationalistic tendencies are rising again, where people are believing again, they're just promoting this redemptive violent myth that we can be victorious and win, even if what that means is that we displace everybody in our country, kill all of our young people and gain nothing.
I think it's
which
been
is what
so...
happened, you know, which is what's happening. It's just a sacrificial slaughter of young boys into a thing that doesn't mean anything. And I just think it's important to pay attention to this. I think God's all over this movie in a lament. I think it's a lament of a myth of redemptive violence that we live in. And so there was so much in me that was like triggered in a way where I was just wanting it to be different. And I could feel all this impact of living in a culture that like where redemptive violence, like we can win by conflict and conflict can be redeemed. You know, like all this stuff in me was like rising to the surface going, come on. And then it just having no relief.
Yeah.
Like no relief, not even a minute of relief. And I just was like, whoa, this is so hard to listen to when you've been fed a steady diet of war is redemptive.
Yeah. And maybe there's something in that too, that we're so, especially, I mean, there are many countries in the world, obviously, that are still feeling the keen and devastating impacts of war. But in a lot of the Western countries, it has now been several generations. And so it went from being a core memory of people and something that like, I think about this has kind of been brought up, the kind of the greatest generation saw the horrors of war and said, we're going to build a better world, and then handed it over to the boomers who... destroyed it, but now have watched movies about how great war is without actually recognizing. And we see this politicians all the time that Donald Trump was saying, like, do you know how many soldiers I'm willing to send over there? It's like, send yourself, like send your children. Like, this isn't someone who hasn't been impacted by war threatening to sacrifice the lives of others. It isn't impressive. It's not bold. It's not strong. It's just horror.
This is also one of the things, and I'm transitioning to the final movie, but one of the things that I would say is very interesting in the Best Picture list this year is there's a lot of kind of exposés or truth telling in the stories they picked. So the final movie that's on the list here that I just want to mention something about is The Triangle of Sadness. James has not watched this
movie. It sounds really fun, though.
But James,
like,
you want to watch this movie. I kid you not. This movie was made for you. Okay? It was made for you. You're going to love this movie. The whole time I was watching this movie, I'm like, James is going to love this movie. It's your movie. It is a scathing critique of excessive wealth.
It does sound like my jazz.
It's a scathing critique. Now, again, it's a comedy. It's a dark, dark comedy. Dark comedy. Okay? Okay. It's a dark, dark, dark comedy. So don't say I didn't warn you. But it starts off, the triangle of sadness is actually the part of your face where your eyebrows and your top of your nose are. It makes a triangle there. And they call that the triangle of sadness. And there's like a bit of a mockery in the movie of models who can manipulate their triangle to be like super. So the higher the brand, you know, the higher the money ask of the brand, then their advertising, it changes. So the more costly it is, the more the models use their triangle of sadness to look mad or angry at you. And then the cheaper it is, the more happy and inviting they are. So like Old Navy, they're like all happy and excited. And then they're like Versace and they're all like angry and they're basically like despising you and then you're paying to be despised.
It's so true.
Yeah, and it's so true. You're just like, oh my goodness. Like, so that's
like,
how
what
it
did
kind
I do?
Of, that's how it begins. And then there's all, so there's so much in this movie. I think we could spend a long time. It might even be worth once you've watched it, James, it might even be worth doing a longer version
of this. We'll come back. All right,
on all things good. Wealth, but then also things money can't buy.
Okay.
And then in those situations in our lives where we're in places where money just can't buy what it is that we actually need, how desperately, just how desperate we are. And how desperately ill-equipped we are to survive in a world that doesn't require wealth. And so there's this flip that happens in the in the story, and the whole entire value system gets flipped upside down, and all the people with all the wealth and the privilege and actually are helpless. And there's not enough money in the world that could help them out. And then the servant in the previous one is actually the one with some life skills that can help. And so she becomes the top dog.
Okay.
And actually what's interesting is that she does not become a good top dog. She becomes a top dog like they were top dogs. And so exploits people and uses people and like all the things. And so it's just literally just flipped, which is also just a very fascinating commentary. But the whole thing is just an expose on wealth. And and an expose on classism.
Sure.
And how we do that and how that matters. And there's a wonderful cameo by Woody Harrelson, which is just hilarious. And just worth watching the movie just for that, where he speaks on the speaker on this, you know, elite cruise and just like says all these things into the microphone. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant expose on wealth, but it is dark, dark, dark. So anybody, if you don't like seeing the things,
we've really stressed that.
Don't watch the movie. I'm not recommending it to people who are skirmish in their in their movie watching. But if you like a very bleak expose on classism and the way that we've used excessive wealth in harmful ways, this movie's for you.
So this doesn't feel a million miles from The Menu, which is going to be another movie that we're talking about at some point.
As a matter of fact, if you were to watch this movie before we do that on
All right,
the menu,
we'll do both. All right,
we could actually do them both because they're pretty much identical.
I'm there.
In different ways, but they're so connected. Yeah. So I definitely think you should.
All right. Sounds good. We'll do that.
So that's just a little sneak peek, guys, if you want a sneak peek of what's coming up. We are going to critique The Menu, which is James' favorite movie of the year. But I think he's soon going to add Triangle
Sadness. Yeah, it sounds like
to the list. And they're very similar critiques. We've got Squid Games coming up. We've got a bunch more
and we're
excited about them. But these two episodes have been like just a real squeeze of all these movies just because we wanted to have a broad understanding of what's going on at the Oscars and what culture is saying and what it might mean to us. I do think there are some beautiful things being said and being told and being talked about, and it's worthy of paying attention to and to be people of faith and how our faith informs us in these ways. And I pray it's helpful to you. So cheers, guys. Thanks for hanging in.
Peace.